A city is stronger together. So let's hear from the business and community leaders that keep Milwaukee on the upswing. Presented by Horicon Bank, the natural choice for all your banking needs. Now here's the host that's always on the upswing, WTMJ's Jeff Sherman.
Now, to business, gentlemen.
Welcome to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. We are, as always, presented by the good community-minded people at Horicon Bank. So throughout your week this week, which I hope is a great week for you, I'm sure like you, you get a ton of messages, right? You get all the social media mentions, the texts, the emails, they just never stop. How do you handle email? It's one of our topics for later when Martin Moore joins us. He's our resident technology and social media expert. The future of almost everything. Martin will join us. The future of email, how you handle it day to day. There's some good tips that Martin has for sure. So many things in our communities right now. I love to take walks in the afternoon and I look at the new buildings, the new homes for sale, the closings. I even like to see like what's wrong in our communities, right? Often though, I'm putting the good spin on things. All the time I'm putting the good spin on things. I walked through our community grocery store a couple weeks ago and I took a picture. I posted it on social and for 2 weeks, it was the only thing people wanted to talk to me about. It was about a new Greeby's Bakery pop-up shop coming to the village of Shorewood. So I reached out to one of the owners, Colton Greeby. Colton's going to join us in studio to talk about what his family is doing in the donut and bakery space. Makes you think, like, what is your favorite donut? There's so many great options here. Have you been to Cranky Al's out in Wauwatosa? They do a wonderful job. You got Donut Monster in Whitefish Bay. How about Honey Dip Donuts on Layton? Like, that is old school. Really, really good stuff. And truly, like for me, every now and then, Dunkin' Donuts will do the trick. But the family business, like the iconic crawler that Greeby's does, they've been doing it for like 90 years. So I'm really excited to have Colton Greeby from Greeby's Bakery join us in studio. He'll join us when we come back. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. Greeby's Bakery, fourth generation, family-owned and operated business. Wisconsin proud all the way since 1937. Recently, I mentioned this in the intro, but I was walking through my regular grocery store in the village of Shorewood, and I saw this coming soon sign for Greeby's Bakery. And I took a picture, posted it on social, and literally it's all people talk to me about for like 2 weeks. So I had to find one of the family members of Greeby's to come in and talk to us. So I'm thankful Colton Greeby took some time out of his day to spend it with us. Colton, thanks for being here.
No, thanks for having me. This is a true honor.
So I got to just start here. Do you ever just sit back, and we'll get to your family story in a minute, but do you ever just sit back and say, you know what? I sell donuts for a living. How cool is that?
Yeah, it is kind of cool because, you know, one of the things I think about is that when you tell someone you're a baker, they automatically have like a predisposition, right? I'm the guy that's walking around carrying a rolling pin, you know, and they all kind of, it kind of gets to the heart of the matter.
Right, you got flour all over you.
Yeah, covered in flour. Right. But yeah, sometimes what I like is it adds levity to our jobs every day, right? Obviously, we take our jobs very seriously, but sometimes I look down at my shirt and I'm covered in chocolate and I'm like, okay, how bad could it really be?
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
So yeah, being a baker, it's an immense honor.
Donuts bring smiles to everyone's face. So tell us, just share a bit of the origin story for us. You know, Irene's home baking, kind of growing to multiple retail outlets and the wholesale engine that you've built. Yeah. But tell us the kind of the legacy story of Greeby's.
Yeah, what's really cool about the legacy series, obviously, because it's my family, but the more and more I tell people about the legacy is that you can start to track it and really follow the industry trends, right? Specifically back to 1937 when my great-grandmother started. So how it all happened was my great-grandmother and my great-grandfather were actually traveling musicians, and they met out in New York. Okay. They settled down in Wisconsin, and actually my great-grandfather was the first to play live music for 620 WTMJ, Heine and the Grenadiers. Yeah, yeah.
Good so, karma coming
so
together.
I know. How crazy is that? So he was Heine and the Grenadiers, and there's still pictures of him up.
Okay.
As being one of the first to do that. Jeez. So unfortunately, you know, necessity is the mother of all invention, right? He had a stroke. So, okay. You know, here my great-grandmother.
When was that? Well,
so that would have been like, yeah, like that would have been like just pre, I would think, 1937. Okay. The actual foundation is a little bit, you know, fuzzy. Right. I get more information.
Right. Okay.
But, you know, picture this. It's 1937. Your husband now can no longer, you know, keep a roof over the head and food on the table. And you got two kids. What do you do?
Mm-hmm.
Well, my great-grandmother decided I'm going to start baking. And, you know, there's a lot of cool family lore in between all of that. You know, we were told by one like factor of the family that it was actually like her sister who taught her how to bake, and that's kind of where we started, and that's how it went. But you know, if I always like to say, like, first generation, my great grandmother, if our business was a tree, she's the one who planted the tree,
right?
Then my grandfather came in, and he would have been coming in right out of the Korean War. He was a cook for the, you know, in the Korean War, and he was really the titan of industry that got our business to where it's at today, right? So he really like think of like nitrogen, right, to a tree, right? He's the one who really started to grow it. And what's interesting is that I always say that our origin story has more to do with my family being more entrepreneurial than bakery related, because what happened was is that back in the 60s, you had bakeries on every corner, right? And the family grocery store started popping up, and that's really what started to wipe away butchers and bakeries. So my grandpa had the downfield vision and said, hey, let me run your grocery department.
Business is business,
and
right?
Business is business. And you know, there's a lot of stuff happened from then, but
for sure.
It's funny how cyclical business is, right?
I mean, when you look back, I mean, it's all about family. It's all about business. But what are some of the lessons that you and your brother kind of still carry from your great-grandmother in the business today?
Yeah, I think one of the greatest lessons that we learned, you know, I've had the immense opportunity to be surrounded, you know, in situations maybe most kids my age weren't, you know, growing up, starting at the age of 9, working in the bakery, being put in some real life situations. If I could look back at one of the biggest lessons I learned, it has something to do with that quality factor in our products, right? And the best way I could describe it is that, you know, you go up, you want to get some bread, right? And you go up to this wall, okay? And you see all this artisan craft bread on the wall, okay? There's something intuitively in humans that when we see that, that's delicious to us, right? Now, I'm not saying that highly commercialized bread is bad. It's just different.
Right.
But we have stayed true to form, that we are that kind of that artisan bread wall, if you will, of donuts. Because when you look at our case of our donuts, we're doing it all by hand, right? Mm-hmm. We are handcrafted donuts. Mm-hmm. Most companies our size would have about one or two people doing what we do. We employ over 100 people in doing what we do. So it's that love factor we put in the product.
I mean, times and tastes have changed for sure through the years. And when we come back from the break, I want to talk about your recent trip to Las Vegas and the International Bakery Expo, because I'm sure you learned a lot there. And then we're going to talk about the Village of Shorewood and what you're doing with Kroger and Metro Market there, because it's amazing. It's already been a huge hit. I know, because I was there this morning and all the donuts I bought in my kitchen were gone very, very quickly. We're talking with Colton Grebe. This is The Upswing. You are listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. Grebe's Bakery, a Wisconsin institution since 1937, bringing its beloved donuts and baked goods inside the Metro Market in Shorewood and all around the area. But we're going to talk about that location specifically in a moment. But Colton Grebe joins us in studio. Colton, you are just back from Las Vegas, the big International Bakery Expo. So you go to these expos. What do you learn there? Like, is it all just taste testing, or are there trends? Is it marketing? Like, what do you do at a donut expo?
Yeah, I think this is one of the better ways to get a pulse on the industry right now. And one pulse on our industry right now that people can't, you know, no one can ignore is really consumer preferences, specifically around the idea of healthy foods, right, in our global food supply. And obviously, you know, the source of information – depends on the information you get back, right? So one of the cool sessions I was in on was actually brought on by the American Bakers Association. And I was really, really happy to see, because on this panel, you had nutritionists, you had lobbyists, you had people really from all sorts of, you know, the industry really coming together and having a conversation. Yeah. And one of the big takeaways, as, you know, as a bakery guy, right?
Right.
I eat pretty clean. Right? Yeah. I eat pretty healthy.
Okay.
But there's that one part of my day, though, right? It's the one part of my day, right? I just want something to taste good, right?
Yeah.
Just let me forget about everything else. Let me eat that one good thing. And us as bakers, you know, the joke is you're seeing, you know, pea proteins and donuts these days. You're right. Seeing a lot of things like that. And you know,
it's all about protein, it seems like. You walk down the grocery aisle and everything
protein,
is protein infused.
Right? Which,
like,
is,
do you jump on those trends?
Well, you know, I definitely, being an R&D guy, I'm aware of them.
Yeah.
You know, went to school for baking.
Right.
I love formulation. I love looking at that.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing I can't ignore is the fact that people will only eat things that taste good when it comes to dessert, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So that
yeah.
permissible indulgence category, you know, is really something we're keen on, and it's something we've really, really stayed focused on.
So from a health concern standpoint, are you seeing that people are looking at the ingredients labels for grams of sugar and asking for, ooh, what about stevia? What about monk fruit? What about those sugar alternatives? Are you sensing that in the marketplace?
Yeah, you know, we are. And I think, you know, we were talking a little bit about most kids' bedtime stories are a little bit different than mine, right? You know, being, you know, growing up right. in a family bakery, you know, I remember the Atkins, you know, craze.
Yeah.
I remember low fat. I remember all those things. And I remember my family was pretty like, ah, that's a, you know, that'll die off. That'll do this. But I think the local and the recent trends in health, I don't think this is going away. I think this is more of a shift towards, hey, tell me what are the things I can eat that maybe I shouldn't eat a lot of, and then educate me on maybe some of the things that I should never eat, right? And that's right. where, as a food, as someone who formulates food and recipes,
right.
it would be really nice to start understanding that, because there's some smart people that are working
yeah.
in food that we can really start to work around.
I mean, transparency and education, I
yeah.
think, are so very important everywhere in our lives.
Yeah.
And everyone, it's so easy to say, oh, all things in moderation. But, you know, some things you don't want in moderation,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
You want something better.
Exactly.
And I think when it comes to, I don't know, treats, you want to also know that there's any bad stuff in them. So,
correct.
You know, buying stuff that is local and trusted, at least in my world,
yeah,
I appreciate and respect that. So, talking about my world, it's all about me. No, but let's go to my village here.
Yeah.
And the new, you kind of have a new store within a store concept
yeah.
within Kroger, within the Metro Market. Talk about that process and kind of how it plays into your growth as a company.
Yeah, I mean, you know, what this represents really is, there's a lot of words that come to mind, you know, gratitude, obviously, for teaming up with them, but opportunities. I know that when we first got in talks about this, everybody was really excited across the board
yeah.
because, A, it's a way for a family bakery like ours to continue to expand, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I know a lot of people in business, when it comes to family business, a lot of it is about just surviving, right?
Right.
So that's a big thing for Greeby's is keeping this legacy
yeah.
alive.
Well, and the thing, Kroger still sells its own donuts
yeah.
at the store, right?
Correct.
But you walk in and it's a big Greeby's neon sign,
right.
And I have that choice.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that choice. And, you know, I always like to say, you know, when we start talking quality, this is the best way I can describe quality in bakery, right? When people think quality, they think of, like, at least I do, I think of a French chef in a Michelin star restaurant, right? It's plated, beautiful, you know, it's probably going to be super expensive.
Mm-hmm.
But Greeby's is here to kind of show there's a flip side of that quality, right? Something I like to call grandma's quality, right? It's like you're going to grandma's house for Christmas, you open that door, and it's just like that quality of food just wraps you up and hugs you, right?
Yeah.
It's going to be affordable. It's going to taste good. And it just evokes a feeling. That's the kind of quality yeah. that we're going after.
Well, and there's a lot of things on the menu, not only in all your locations, but at the new Shorewood location.
Yeah.
The kind of the historic crawler
yep.
is what Greeby's is known for.
Yes.
Talk about that process, the ingredients and the technique, and what there may be some people listening that don't know what a crawler is. Come on.
Yeah. So it's always the conversation with the crawler specifically. It's like, what experience do I want people to have? Do I want them to eat a donut and say, this is the best donut I ever had? Or do I want them to eat, the crawler and say like, oh, this is a crawler. This is really good. Right. So we're going back and forth on that. But, you know, the beautiful thing about the crawler, you know, we go back to grandma's quality. There is not one of our donuts that are going to look the same. Right. It's that handcrafted, time tested quality that we're going after. But what's really cool behind the scenes with the crawler that not a lot of people know is that if there's some bakery nerds out there listening, how we make crawlers is not how anybody else in the country makes a donut. And I know that because I've been in some big bakeries before. We've seen how it's done. We have all custom equipment that we use to make it, you know, to finish it. There's a lot of ingenuity that we do with that product.
All right. Yeah, it's a staple for sure. And there's truly something just special and unique about them. Another thing that's really unique that I want to get to when we come back from the break is your relationship with the cream puff. Now, maybe not everyone knows the crawler, but everyone knows the cream puff, and the Grebe's family has been involved there. And I'm guessing there's some things you've learned from, you know, your time in the cream puff pavilion, selling hundreds of thousands of cream puffs, that kind of helps you with the brand equity of the business day to day. You listen to The Upswing. This is WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing, talking donuts and more. Colton Grebe from Grebe's Bakery joins us in studio. So before we talk about what's happening next weekend, Colton, I want to talk a bit about cream puffs. Your family co-directs the operations out at Wisconsin State Fair Park in the cream puff pavilion. You sell hundreds of thousands of cream puffs and kind of work on the administration and the behind the scenes there. What is the connective tissue between the cream puff and what you do day to day that kind of reinforces the quality of just the business?
Yeah, I think a couple things come to mind. I would think quality at scale.
Yeah.
I always like to say, you know, we're big enough to handle volume, but we're small enough to be agile. When things are so iconic as, you know, some of the jokes I say, it's like, you know, cream puffs by day, crawlers by night, you know, two classic Milwaukee institutions. Yeah. And sometimes, you know, when we look at reformulating things and we think we're going to hit a home run with a new flavor, it goes to show you people just want to play the hits. It's the originals, right?
Yeah,
and
right.
Just staying true to form with that and not taking shortcuts, because anytime you were making something by hand, there's an exchange there, right? That's that love factor.
Yeah. So what's happening on September 28th at Metro Market in Sherwood?
Yeah. Well,
you got a big name coming.
We got a big name coming. Not only is it as a diehard Packer fan, right? That's a big game that everybody's circling, but it's also the grand opening.
Yes.
Right? It's going to be a party. Okay. It's going to be a lot of fun. You know, Pro Football Hall of Famer Leroy Butler.
Right.
I'm going to be a little starstruck when I see him, I'll be honest.
Okay.
Hopefully I can keep my composure there.
That's Sunday, September 28th from 10 to noon at the Metro Market in Sherwood. Can we wrap up with a couple like rapid fire donut questions?
Yes, absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely.
Let's do this. What is your favorite donut other than the ones that your family bakery produces?
Oh, man. I would say I'll go outside of Wisconsin, Five-Star Bakery out in Portland, Oregon. They do a blueberry bourbon basil glaze on a yeast-raised donut.
Okay.
Woo, that's a good one.
All right. I will put it on the list. What's your most underappreciated item on the menu? Actually, I got to ask.
Yeah.
Well, answer that question first,
okay.
Then I got another question.
This one hits kind of home. My first project outside of baking school was a chocolate chip cookie.
Okay.
I worked on that for probably way too long.
Okay.
And so there are many chocolate chip cookies, I would say.
All right. Do you just have an old school cake donut?
Yes.
On the menu?
Okay. Yes.
All right.
We do.
That's still my favorite. You talk about going to, it's probably my lifelong Wisconsinite coming out, but I'm just old school cake donut all day. All the time. What's your favorite Milwaukee area restaurant?
Ooh, Chef Paz in West Dallas. It's Peruvian food. It's local. It's got that grandma's quality.
All right.
It's good food.
Very good. I think I probably know the answer to this, but what is like the one tradition, the family tradition you're just never going to change? And then an innovation that surprised you? Because you've done a lot of like the fruit flavors and the infusions and all that stuff.
Right.
So talk about the tradition and then kind of the surprise that you've created?
Well, because it's rapid fire, obviously the commitment to quality, I have to say that, but right. I'm going to give you a fun one, right? So we have a tradition at Greeby's for Fat Tuesday, biggest holiday ever. For whatever reason, we crave Taco Bell on Fat Tuesday, so the whole staff gets Taco Bell that day. That's one of those kind of weird traditions.
That's good.
Yeah, and then innovation-wise, we just made an ube crawler the other day. Ube's pretty popular
right now.
Pretty hot
ingredient, yeah.
And when people don't know what it is and they eat it, they're like, hey, why is this purple?
Yeah.
They're pretty surprised. It's pretty good.
I'm a big fan of the purple bun. It's really, really good stuff. That's a good one. And finally, I love to ask everyone, especially when I get business leaders and just people that have been doing it for so long. And, you know, the day-to-day business, it's always a fun challenge. You're getting thrown a lot of things. But ultimately, Colton, how do you define success?
Oh, man. Defining success is with our culture at Greeby's Bakery. By far and away. It's people first, it's problem second.
Yeah. Very good. Well, hey, all the best, continued success to you and your family. You know that the Sherman family is going to continue to eat the donuts for sure.
Thank you for supporting the business.
It's time to fast forward. Welcome to the future of almost everything in Wisconsin on the upswing. Joining WTMJ's Jeff Sherman, here's Martin Moore.
Welcome back to the Upswing, the future of almost everything. Our good friend Martin Moore back with us in the studio. Martin, welcome.
Hi, Jeff. How are you? I've missed you. It's been a couple weeks.
I know. I miss you, too. Lots of things on the technology map for us to talk about. I don't even know where to start. I'm going to start with Apple because, you know, Apple makes its announcements. Everyone wants to see, all right, what's next? With this company that is known for design and innovation, are you excited about this thin phone release coming from Apple? Or is it just, I don't know, design for the sake of design?
No.
No, I'm not. All right, move on.
I don't think anybody ever asked for a thinner phone. I think it's pretty ubiquitous. Everybody wants, give me a slightly thicker phone, give me better battery life. Yeah. So, you know, when I leave the airport and I get to my hotel, it's not dead.
Well, so what's a super thin phone for then? Or who is the target customer here?
I think they just flex, maybe. I don't know what the point of it is. And the thing that is kind of interesting about it is it's not like the whole phone is super thin. It's just part of it. Then it has a giant camera bump that's like twice as thick. So
you
it's
think
like,
they're going to use that camera bump for something in the future? Like that's what a lot of people are thinking. Like, ooh, the innovation is
foldable phone
thinness, but maybe this is
people think that this is the precursor to a foldable phone. Get it as thin as you can, so you can sandwich two together. That's kind of what I think it is. And so they're testing the waters, but I don't know how many people are going to buy this thing. One camera, thinness kind of is meh.
Yeah. Well, and then obviously you spend your day to day in the headphone space, so to speak.
Sure.
So you have live translation with the AirPods Pro 3.
Very cool.
That's headline grabbing for sure. And that's real world.
Very, very cool. You know, it's stuff that we've heard about and we've seen in movies and stuff like that. Like I remember seeing it in Star Trek when like people would have headphones on and they'd be talking to each other in different languages, but in the headphones, they could hear their own language. I think that's going to be really cool, especially if you're traveling to different countries.
Yeah.
It's predicated on both people have AirPods 3, or at a minimum, your phone can sort of dictate in text what the other person's saying and you're saying, and then you can kind of show it to them. So very, very cool. It's the beginning of something I think that's going to be very, very helpful to people.
Yeah, the Apple announcements always come with a ton of fanfare, and people like to debate the good and bad, the ugly, right?
Sure.
That's what we like to do. But when you think about your iPhone, what do you want your next phone to do? Like, it's so easy to say, well, they didn't announce this, they didn't do that. But, like, what do we want our phones to do that they don't already do?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. Phones they've peaked. I mean, they peaked years ago. And I think they're just cramming things into it. Nobody really wants, nobody asks for, and no one uses just to keep them fresh.
Mm-hmm.
What I would love is something that, like, Samsung did with, like, the Samsung DeX, where you plug your phone into, like, a USB-C port, and it docks it to a giant monitor, changes it from iOS to macOS, and you basically have a MacBook in your pocket that you can just plug in to a monitor and then use it like a regular computer.
Yeah.
It would cannibalize Apple's other products, but I think that would be...
But but it could
that would be
collaborate
awesome.
With its other products too. You know, cross.
But other than that, the cameras are fine. The cameras have been fine. It's fast enough to cruise Facebook and log into your bank. Like, I don't know what else they can do.
Yeah. All right. All right. I like that answer. Well, let's go up in the air and look at the future of. Kind of how we fly. You get on the plane, of course, the phone goes into airplane mode.
Does it, Jeff?
Right away. I always do that because I'm a good, responsible citizen,
God bless
and that's
you.
What you have to do. We flew
I
American
sit next
Airlines.
To you.
You'd love to sit next to me in a flight. We flew American Airlines a couple weekends ago to Charlotte, and just a great experience. Like the plane.
Do you have a favorite airline?
The plane was new. I got to say it was American right now, just because this is my most recent experience. Everyone on board was super nice. The plane was clean. And what more do you want? Wi-Fi worked really well.
That's a big one.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably not Spirit.
No, Spirit is the Greyhound of the sky.
Yes.
You won't catch. I'd rather walk than fly Spirit.
So Spirit actually announced this week that they're looking at more cuts and cutting back not only on jobs, but flights. So it'll be interesting to see where Spirit goes. Delta, I saw.
I like me some Delta.
In the news, they're talking about some AI pricing, using AI more for market-based pricing, which stoked some fears a little bit because it's like, are they going to price based upon demand? Are they going to price based upon who we are?
Sure.
Like all that data is
What if I use AI to hack Delta's? Delta's
nice.
Algorithm and how they're trying to get me, and it's an AI versus AI ticket price war.
Yeah,
two people. I got ChatGPT. I got Gemini.
That's right.
Let's go. Let's
bring
roll.
It. I wanted to ask you about Southwest, though. If you saw this, Southwest Airlines will soon require travelers who don't fit within the armrests of their seat to pay for an extra one in advance. It's part of a bunch of changes that are coming to Southwest, including the seat assignments that's going to begin. I think it's January 27th of next year.
That one I celebrate.
So what are some of the implications here and maybe some of the fears from a customer standpoint?
Sure. I mean, it's an interesting conversation. In 2024, I think it was like 40.8% of Americans were considered obese. Like 4 or 5% are considered severely obese. In 99 to 2000, I think it was 30%. So, you know, people we're not eating as healthy. We're getting bigger, and the seats are getting smaller, and it's created a problem for some of the airlines who have made the smaller seats. You know, it's a touchy topic. You know, a lot of people can't afford to pay for two different seats. It could create some disparity, but at the same time, everybody pays the same price, and you know, you don't want someone halfway in your seat. And so, I get both sides of it. The nice thing is, if there is an available seat next to the one that the person picked, they can get refunded if the plane wasn't full or no one actually sat next to them. So that's kind of nice.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out, what, if any, backlash there is. But I can see why they would do it. I mean, we've all been in a situation like that, and I'd rather take that than a crying baby.
That is true. That is a good point. Yeah, it's a balance between the space and the safety and the dignity of the customer,
sure,
right?
Absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of nuance to it.
As long as you're transparent up front, maybe you alleviate some of that, but it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
Sure.
One thing for sure that I'm not totally sure about, we've been looking at some new homes lately, and I saw in the Wall Street Journal that some homeowners are saying, all right, we don't know if you're going to like our home, but if you'd like to find out, you can have a sleepover here. I want to get your thoughts on sleepovers as part of a real estate transaction. This is The Upswing. We're talking to our good friend, Martin Moore. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman, joined in studio by Martin Moore. So, Martin, buyers are beginning to test drive homes with sleepovers. I saw this in the Wall Street Journal that especially higher-end home sellers are allowing prospective buyers to test drive the house with a sleepover. I'm just going to ask you, would you and your wife do this?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. With, yeah. I mean, so how long did they say? Is it just a night?
Yeah,
a week?
I think you negotiate that with the homeowner.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating. You know, you test drive a car before you buy it, which is a big purchase.
Yeah.
You know, you do a lot of research with things that you buy, but it's like a house. You go in there one, two times, and then you cross your fingers and hope the thing doesn't, you know, the basement doesn't flood, the walls cave in, and...
It makes me think, though, like, what are the protections, though, that are needed? Like, do you need an NDA? Do you need an insurance rider? Like, it just seems like it's
a
little odd.
I don't see how it would be any different than, like, if you spent the night at my house or something like that, or you Airbnb'd it. I don't know if there's any extra insurances or anything you need.
Right.
But, I mean, I like the idea. The flip side, though, is it does give the buyer potentially time to sort of really – nitpick the house and get into areas and look at things that they otherwise might not see. But I suppose an inspection would cover that.
Yeah, yeah.
But I like it. You know, to get the feel of it, you know, it can get very exciting finding a house that's close to what you want. But there may be something where you're like, I don't know if I like that it didn't have a bathroom on the first floor or the basement wasn't big enough or whatever it may be.
Right. And communities and homes can feel different during the day and at night,
absolutely,
too, right?
That's a great point.
You're going to notice different things. Being in a home at night, maybe the sounds.
Sure.
What are the things that you're going to look for when you're at the sleepover? You're going to have your phone next to you. You're going to take notes. What are you looking for?
Yeah. Noisy neighbors. Maybe there's a dog next door.
Yeah.
I mean, we've all had the neighbor where all of a sudden they get a dog and that thing just barks nonstop. That might be a deal breaker for me. You know, there could be loud cars. There could be a frat house, all kinds of stuff.
Right.
So, yeah, spend the night. Take some walks around the neighborhood, you know, see who the people are, what the neighborhood's like. And I think it gives people a better gauge and metric to make a big purchase like that. And I can't hurt if you want to sell your house. You got to get innovative and do what you can do.
That's right. I like it. I really like it.
It's fine.
Done. All right. When we sell our house, feel free.
You're looking to move?
No.
Okay.
We got several years, but I'm always kind of looking.
We're always kind of looking.
You're always looking, especially you log
Zillow's
on Zillow
always
and
in
you
an
spend
open
an hour
tab.
There and you're like, ooh. But I think when we sell our house, if somebody said, I want to sleep over, I'd be like, yeah, sure.
Do it.
All right, do it. We have good neighbors. All right, one thing I do a lot in my house is, and I probably shouldn't even admit this, but late nights, I'm still checking my email.
Sure.
Like, I'm getting
Oof.
Emails from Martin Moore and other important Oof. People that I need to respond to, or at least know what's happening the next day. The average knowledge worker, I saw this last week, now gets hit with 117 emails per day. Recent study said that 28% of the day, 28% of our weeks taken up by email. How do you handle your day-to-day email? Because I'm always just super interested with super busy people. Like, how do you deal with it?
One of the biggest issues that I have is my work email. It's on some list. And so navigating like this, I get a massive amount of spam. I'm sure you probably do and the listeners do. A massive amount of spam. And that's probably been my biggest issue is trying to – I mean, I get a lot of emails throughout the day.
Right.
And so filtering out – these other emails that look very convincing that it's someone I worked with or someone, you know, something that's important has been tough. So I use focused inboxes big time.
Right.
I use lots of folders to try and find old emails because I use Outlook and their search is terrible.
I like the folders.
Yeah.
You know, you can have a reply, you can have a do, you can have meetings, and you
VIP
can curate
is
that.
VIP is a big one.
Yeah.
People that like I do not want to miss under any circumstance, VIP, so that's a special inbox. And so I play a lot of games to try and choreograph making sure that I don't make people wait 1, 2, 3 days, which I just responded to an email before before we came on the show that was 8 days old. And so those are sort of my hat. Do you have anything that you do?
Yeah, you don't want it to like sabotage your day or your week. I mean, I force myself to close the inbox during the day for focused times.
Yeah.
It's hard because you feel like you're going to miss stuff.
Yep.
And then first thing in the morning, I try to go through some spam and junk so I don't
Morning's
have to do
the
that
best
later.
Time.
But also, there's a rub there for me because if I go right into my email when I wake up, then you're in.
Yes.
You're in for the day.
Yeah.
So it's
you can get
tough.
Lost very quick and trap yourself.
Yes. Yeah. There's a lot of good AI and a lot of good systems out there that you can dive in and manage your email.
The other thing,
community.
Too, is how quickly you respond to email sets an expectation for the receiver. And so if you respond 2 seconds after they email you back, they might expect that and then bug you. And so I like to make people wait a little bit.
All right. We got about 2 more minutes here, Martin. I know your favorite season is coming up. Bucks season. Actually, this is the best sports season right now because you got the Brewers rolling into the playoffs. You got the Packers in warm weather times at Lambeau, and you got the anticipation of the Bucks coming. In terms of loving Milwaukee and loving the Wisconsin sports scene, no one loves Milwaukee more than you, Martin. But I have to ask you, because someone asked me this last week. 2 things that you'd change about our community here in Milwaukee and why.
Ooh, I'm going to make this quick so you can respond. One, which is pretty ubiquitous, I think, public transportation. I mean, I've been to all 50 states, virtually every major city. This city is, in my opinion, not walkable or bikeable, especially trying to get to one of our pride and joys, the lakefront. You're asking tourists to play Frogger across Lincoln Memorial, which brings you to my second one, the lakefront. I need the lakefront Gateway Plaza. I was at like the initial, like 10 or 15 years ago, the idea for it to have this giant sort of thing that goes over Lincoln Memorial with cafes and a park and an ice skating rink and a beer garden. But I don't think we take advantage of our lakefront just as far as, I don't know, I'm making stuff up, but a boardwalk and more restaurants and shops and a pier and just things other than kicking it at the beach and riding bird scooters up and down. I think there's a big opportunity to sort of revamp it and make it a little bit more of a tourist destination, isn't but the word, but celebrate it a little bit more.
Yeah.
You?
I would dump 100,000 new people into downtown and force them to be residents. That's one thing I would do.
Love it.
Just because I think new energy, new voices creates new optimism.
Hey, we can house most of them in the Contour.
Yes. And then if we can take our graduate college level percentage up 1%.
I like that.
You get even more entrepreneurs, you get even more business makers, you get even more thought leaders, and I think there's more opportunity for everyone.
They can cement themselves in the city, start a business in the city, thrive in the city, bring money and more opportunity in the city for people. I like that.
Very good. All right. No matter what, keep on building community and keep on doing what you're doing. We're thankful for our partnership with Horicon Bank. They're doing banking differently. Always there to serve you and your business.